And then it occurred to me, what luck.
Okay.
I swore a solemn vow.
Years ago, I was invited to a party.
And I remember there was a band playing.
Welcome back to another installment of Xfabula Story Stage U. I'm your host, Xfabula co-founder Leah Delaney. Xfabula connects storytellers with live audiences in Milwaukee. We provide a mic, a stage, and a theme for the night. You provide the stories. Today's edition of Xfabula will feature four previously told stories from storytellers who have been selected for the Xfabula Spectacular event happening Saturday, December 11th at Turner Hall Ballroom, where the theme for the spectacular will be gifts. Emmett Gross has appeared on stage at multiple Xfabula events. You're about to hear his story about visiting Ronald Reagan's boyhood home from our February 2010 event, when the theme was Now or Never.
Okay, so I want to open this story with a brief disclaimer. My actions in this story in no way represent any disrespect towards the office of President of the United States or towards any particular man that's held that office. But I grew up on the north side of Milwaukee in the 80s, and I grew up without a lot of money. And that left a strong feeling in me towards then-President Ronald Reagan. So in 2002, I had just finished an internship, and I found myself with a rare combination of extra money and a lot of time. And so I did the only thing that made sense to me, which was to buy the biggest, loudest, brightly colored car I could afford, and me and my brother hopped in and headed west. About halfway through the first day, we were getting ready for a stop in the middle of Illinois. A town called Dixon, Illinois. We were beckoned to this town literally with a sign from above. There was an arch over the road that said, "Welcome to Dixon, Illinois, boyhood home of Ronald Reagan." For two mischievous, lifelong Democrats, this was just too good to pass up. So we got off the freeway and headed into Dixon. Dixon is a town that's given up most of its identity to being the boyhood home of Ronald Reagan. There are plaques dedicated to Reagan everywhere, including one on the main river in Dixon that proclaims his success as a lifeguard in what appeared to us to be a relatively shallow and benign body of water. But The one that had the biggest impact on us was directly in front of the office of the Democratic Party of Dixon. It was a huge plaque dedicated to the greatness of Ronald Reagan. And this plaque was strategically located and so big that no matter how you looked at the Democratic office, the plaque was there. You couldn't think Democrat without being slapped in the face with Ronald Reagan. So after touring around the town for a little bit, we found really what the center of all this Reagan love was, which was his boyhood home. They had turned the house and the grounds into a museum. And as we were walking around the museum, we came across one of the garages. In the garage was an early model car, probably a Ford Model T. And hanging from the bumper was a license plate that said Reagan 1. It was attached with two little thin pieces of wire. And me and my brother came up with the same idea at the same time, and that was that license plate was coming home with us. Obviously we won the license plate because, I mean, it's cool. How many people do you know have a license plate belonging to an ex-president, let alone having a story of how they got it, such as this story that we were about to have. But we won the plate for a lot more than that. We were gonna take the plate for growing up on a block that started out as a self-sufficient, diverse block and overnight turned into a place full of drug houses and police raids. We were gonna take the plate because we grew up on food stamps and mostly ate generic groceries. And if you remember the 80s generics, I'm talking white paper label, black letters. Walking around with those in your cart was just walking around with a sign on your back saying, "I'm poor. This is all I could eat." We were going to take the plate for growing up in a neighborhood and a city that was getting worse and worse and was ignored by the media and the police and the government. This was our action, our now or never moment. This was when we were going to take back a small piece of our life. In the words of my brother, we were going to stick it to the Gipper. So my brother sprinted back to the car to get a pair of wire cutters, and I acted as a lookout. And evidently that wasn't a very good job for me, because as he knelt down to cut the wires, we heard a voice from behind. They said, sure is a beautiful car, isn't it? And we spun around, my brother quickly stashing the wire cutters in his back pocket. And we were greeted with the archetype Republican. Sharply parted hair, polo shirt tucked in the fresh-pressed khakis, about 25 pounds overweight, a little bit pasty. Why don't you come inside, he continued. The tour is about to start. We realized at this point that we really had no choice. We had to just play along. And honestly, we were a little bit disarmed by the overwhelming niceness of this man. I mean, these were two really strangely dressed guys poking around this car. And to wrap up, we went on the tour and we learned the cruel irony that that the cosmos has for us, the cruel sense of justice. We slipped out of Dixon quietly without ever taking the plate, but our next stop on the tour was another piece of quintessential Americana, which was the world's largest truck stop in Iowa.
That story was told by Emmett Gross last February when the theme was Now or Never. Emmett has been chosen to tell a story at the Exfabulous Spectacular event on December 11th at Turner Hall Ballroom, along with the next three storytellers on today's show. Next up, Amy Losey, who also told a story at last February's Now or Never event, a story about her need to get out of a terribly mismatched long-term marriage.
Okay, hi. I have a picture of me when I was getting married, and I'm walking down the aisle, and I'm crying. And if you guys saw the picture, you would look at it, and you would say, oh, look at her, she's crying, that's beautiful. But when I look at that picture, because I was there, I'm not crying. I'm crying. I am crying like a four-year-old girl cries when she gets out of her mother's car and is being led into the doctor's office because she knows she's going to get a shot. I'm crying, okay? Because I never, ever should have walked down the aisle and married that man. I know. But let me tell you, I don't know very many people here tonight, and I know you guys probably don't know me as well, but I bet I can say that I am probably the only one here who was married to a right-wing Republican evangelical Christian engineer. And I was, for 15 years. And during the course of that marriage, I did a lot of things that were wrong, and he did a lot of things that were wrong as well. And it was interesting because we moved out here. We're from California, and we moved out here to Wisconsin. And around about the time we moved out here to Wisconsin, I remember we were sitting at the auditorium for one of my son's concert or band or something. I don't know what it was. And it was over, and my ex-husband, his name is Vance. Vance looked over at me, and he said, Amy, did you know that you were clapping louder than everybody else in this auditorium? And I was like... Yeah, I guess I was. I was really excited. It was a great concert. He was kind of like, And I know, like I said, I don't know a lot of you, but I wouldn't consider myself to be a sentimental person, but I am a person who has a lot of feelings. I have huge, immense feelings. I feel things. I remember my sister said to me when she was like, Amy, you feel things really hard. And I do. I have hard feelings, you know, and I'm with this man who's telling me that I'm clapping louder than everybody else in the auditorium, and I think there's something wrong with that, and I don't know what's wrong. I can't figure it out, you know. So time goes by, and we go to this evangelical Christian church, and it has one of those rockin' contemporary worships. I love them. I love it. It's there's drums, there's guitar, there's cool contemporary Christian music, and I'm in church, and I'm doing my thing, and my ex-husband grabs me by my arm, and he says to me, "Amy, do you realize that you are the only person who's dancing in this entire church? You're dancing in this entire church." And I'm like, I am? I was? Is there something wrong with that? I guess there is. There must be. I don't know what it is, but there's something wrong. There's something wrong with that. And a little bit later, I'm standing in my laundry room, and I'm crying. And I'm really crying. And my ex-husband walks in, and he says to me, "Why are you crying?" And I said, "I'm really unhappy. I'm miserable." And he looked at me, and he said, "Amy, you better get happy, because you have a lot of things to be happy about." And I thought, really? Do I? Well, okay, I must. And I don't know what they are, but they're there. Something, right? And I've got this Gap card, and it's sitting on my desk. I got a little desk in my kitchen. And he said, "I want you to go use that Gap card. You know, this is like in May. I got it at Christmas." He's like, "My mother gave it to you. She meant for you to use it. Go use it." "Oh, I don't want to. I don't want to. I don't want to." And he's like, "Let's just go. Let's go. So we go to the Southridge Mall Gap. And I love the Gap. I'm like, I drop like $500-$600 at the Gap. I love the pocket t-shirt. I love it all. The chinos, everything. I've got the boyfriend chinos. Remember those? I've got them. I love it. So I walk into the Gap. And I've got my $50 Gap card. And he goes, "Choose something. Buy something. You know, what do you want?" And I'm standing in the Gap, and I started to look around, and I realized there wasn't one thing in that Gap that I wanted, because I didn't have any idea of what I wanted. I didn't know. I didn't have any feelings left at all. And I started to cry. And I stood in the Gap at the Southridge Mall crying, holding that Gap card, and I realized that was my now moment. And I got the hell out of that marriage.
You just heard a story told by Amy Losey at our event held last February, where the theme was now or never. If you're just tuning in, I'm Leah Delaney, and today we're featuring previously told stories from storytellers who will be performing at the December 11th Exfabula Spectacular happening at Turner Hall Ballroom. The next storyteller you are about to hear is another multi-event teller. From last season's Stranger in a Strange Land themed event, here is Cindy Grover relaying her tale about a bus trip across Costa Rica.
Okay, so I'm a school teacher, and I'm privileged to have nice, long chunks of time off where I get to go traveling, which is a really wonderful thing. It's my passion. So I think the story I'll tell you is a trip I took when I went to Costa Rica a few years ago to go traveling over spring break, visiting a friend of mine, an American friend of mine that lives there part-time. Her name is Colette. She lives down in the southern part of the country, Atenas. I met her. We went traveling. We had a great week together. We were out on the beaches, went up to the mountains, had a really, really wonderful time. If you ever have a chance to go to Costa Rica, I highly encourage you to go. Anyway, so the end of the week came, and it was time for me to go home, so I was going to have to take the buses back from Atenas, where she's living, in the southern part of the country, up to Liberia, which is in the northern part of the country where I was flying home from. And it involved actually making a couple of connections, and Colette was really worried, because Easter week is a really busy time in Costa Rica in general for tourism. A lot of the Ticos are traveling then, and she was worried I wasn't going to get on the bus. Really, really stressed about this. And I'm laughing, and I'm teasing her, and I'm saying, "Well, Colette, don't worry about it. If I can't get on the bus, I'll just hitchhike back." And she's like, "No, you can't do that. That won't be safe. You're in a strange country. You know, there's a lot of strange people out there. No, no, promise me you won't do that." And I just smiled, and I said, "Look, don't worry about it. You know, trust in the universe. It always provides." So I go off. I go down to the bus station. I catch the first bus. No problem. Get down to San Jose, where I have to make my connection, and it actually was pretty tight. I had to miss several buses before I finally got on one, but I got on. It was all good. Well, it was almost all good in that it was going to be a five-hour bus ride on a bus that had no toilet, and one of my nicknames is Baby Bladder. So it's like, okay, this is going to be a long ride. So about 2 hours into the ride, I'm starting to feel a little uncomfortable. And fortunately, I hear the bus driver saying, "Okay, we're making a rest stop." And I'm like, "Yes, thank you." But I look outside, and we are like out in the middle of nowhere. So I'm thinking, what, the rest stop is behind that bush? But then we go around the corner, and there's a restaurant. And so he pulls in, and he says, "Okay, we've got 15 minutes here. I'm going to honk the horn when you have a warning about it's time to go. I'll stay on the bus, so you can leave all your things on the bus, no problem." Great. So I get off the bus, and there's a big rush to the scary bathroom. And I'm waiting in line, yes. when it's finally my turn, I get in there, and it really is a very scary bathroom. It's the kind where you like hold your breath the entire time that you're in there, and you don't want to touch anything. So I, you know, drop my pants, and I kind of spread my legs to hold my pants up, and I'm kind of squatted and hovering over the toilet so that I'm not really sitting on it, and it's hard to have your balance, so I'm touching the walls with one fingertip so I don't really have to touch the wall. And now I'm poised, ready to do what I need to do, and I hear the bus honk. It's like, oh, crap. Well, not really, but so I pack up shop, and I walk out the door, and I'm, okay, I'm ready to go, and I see the bus is pulling away. Oh. And I'm like, no! Stop! And I'm waving, and the bus keeps going. I run out in the middle of the road, and I'm screaming, literally screaming, waving, stop, stop, come back. And I watch the bus disappear over the horizon, realizing I have no friend on that bus to say, hey, you left Cindy behind. But what I do have on that bus is my suitcase with all my clothes, with my camera, with my money, with my passport, and my plane ticket. Yeah. But the universe provides. And I hear the sound of an oncoming car, and so I spin around on heel, and I stick my thumb out. And amazingly, the car pulls over. It's this little tiny car, I don't know what kind, two cylinders. There's a Costa Rican man, and he leans over, ¿Qué pasa, chica? And I don't speak Spanish very well, but I stick my head in the window, and I say, in broken Spanish, I need bus. You go fast. And I hop in the car. And now he's just looking at me like, what the hell? And I said, I need bus, you go fast. And he starts off down the road. And we're chasing the bus. And now in my mind is that crazy cartoon chase music. Da-da-da, 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 da-da. But amazingly, we eventually see the bus. We catch up with the bus. He honks the horn. He gets the bus driver to pull over. I get on the bus, reunited with my luggage, and it feels so good. Make it all the way back to Liberia, get off the bus, do what I now really need to do, walk over to the phone, and I call my friend Colette. And she says, oh my God, I'm so glad to hear from you. I was so worried you wouldn't catch the bus. And I said, funny you should say that, so was I. Thank you.
You just heard Cindy Grover telling us about being a stranger in a strange land from our April event. Today, we've been featuring stories from Milwaukeeans we selected to tell a story revolving around the theme gifts at our December 11th Exfabula Spectacular at Turner Hall Ballroom. The final story today will be from someone who is used to telling stories with an acoustic guitar and beautiful voice, local musician Lisa Gatewood, who told a story at the Exfabula Show and Tell event held last August about a special kind of pen pal.
My name is Lisa Gatewood. I could describe my item with a lot of different qualifiers. It's a box of letters. It's a box of love letters. It's a box of love letters that were sent to a girl who was far too young to receive them from a man who is far too old to be sending them. This is a box of love letters that I've collected over the past 14 years from my eighth grade guidance counselor. Eddie was a grad student when he came to my middle school to do his practicum project. I was his practicum project. I was troubled. My father hated me. He was writing a paper about what happens to young girls whose parents, namely their father, hates them. You know what happens to those kinds of kids? They fall in love with the first man who shows them the least bit of attention. And I loved Eddie so much. And he would record our weekly sessions on this old tape recorder. And I wondered if he played it back and he turned up the volume, would he be able to hear my heart beating out of my chest or my breath quickening every time he'd say my name. Halfway through the year, Eddie's father had a heart attack and he had to leave the school and he moved to North Carolina. And I cried all morning at school and then I went to the nurse and I said I had a stomach ache and then I went home and I like cried the whole afternoon. And the first letter came 1 year later, along with an admission that not only had his father had a heart attack and he had to leave because of that, but he was battling a painkiller addiction and had left sort of secretly to seek treatment. Which of course I was like, oh my God, he's such a rebel. Cool. That first letter was not a love letter. I don't think like the next 10 were probably love letters. They were just normal like, hey, I'm in high school now. It's really cool, my friends have cars. I was standing next to somebody drinking a beer one time. It's awesome. And he was like, hey, I'm in treatment. and then one day I got this letter from him that told me that he had feelings for me. And I was 15 years old. And I hid the letter between my two mattresses. And I would read it obsessively over and over at night. And I would read it out loud to my girlfriends. And I'd show them pictures of him. And he had like really big muscles. And, you know, and so that's what started it. And he continued to write letters to me. And they all had these grand promises, like, I'm going to get through treatment. And then I'm going to come back. And I'm going to get you. And of course, I was like 15. So that wasn't creepy at the time. Because I was like, cool, that's normal. That's what adults do. They come back and they get 15-year-olds. And then they run away together. And so years passed. And Eddie would slip in and out of sobriety. And in and out of prison. And in and out of rehab. And he kept writing to me, and he kept promising me that he was going to come back for me. And in doing so, he sort of stunted me. I stayed that 14-year-old girl just sitting there and waiting. And if you know me, I certainly didn't wait alone, but I waited, you know, as much as a teenage girl can wait. I was 14 when I met Eddie. 14 years have passed. I am right now the same age that Eddie was when I met him. A few years ago, he relapsed again, and again, there was another letter professing his love for me. I should mention, he only writes to me when he's in prison, pretty much, which my mother is very proud of. And he said to me that he finally got it. You know, this was it. He could see now what his addiction had done, and he's been so stupid and all this stuff he sacrificed. And this is definitely, for real this time, the last time that he will mess up like this. And that he's going to serve his sentence, which is so sexy. And then he's going to come back for me. And that was the moment that I realized that I had grown up, because for the first time, I did not want him to come for me. And I had outgrown those childish ideals and fantasies that came with this sexy older man who was into me, which is so messed up. And I didn't want to have any part in it. So Eddie still writes to me. He tells me that he's worried about me, and because I'm so sad all the time, and which I don't know how he knows that, but okay. But a few months ago, I stopped writing back because that was just the only thing I could do. And instead, I started sending books to him. It became like this game that we would play called I'm Okay. So he writes me like a 7-page love letter and I send him some Salinger. I'm okay. And then he writes to me and he tells me about his mother's visit and how much he wishes that I could come visit. And I send him some C.S. Lewis. I'm okay. And even though I've outgrown it, and even though I don't want him to come, I cannot throw out this box of love letters. There are a lot of them, and I don't read them, but I keep them in my bedroom, and I'm sure if I ever do meet anybody, they will think that is weird, and I will tell them that there's something else, but don't look at them, and then that will seem weird. But I know that every day when I go to my mailbox, I'm looking for a love letter from Eddie, and there is not a single day that I go to my mailbox and I don't think about that when I open it. Because as much as you realize that something is totally unhealthy and totally messed up, you can't help but have that 14-year-old girl inside you want that attention and want those letters. And every once in a while, one of them does come, about every 2 months right now, and I add it to the box. I only read them once now. And then I send them a book, because I'm okay. The end.
You just heard Lisa Gatewood telling us her show and tell story at our Xfabula Gorilla Story Slam event, the adult show and tell, last August at the Milwaukee Art Museum. We're pretty excited about our upcoming Xfabula Spectacular this December 11th at Turner Hall Ballroom. As always, the event will feature true personal stories, but this event differs from our regular season monthly events in that most of the storytellers are pre-selected. We saved one storytelling slot for a randomly drawn storyteller who volunteers on the night of the event. Come early to put your name in the hat for the chance to tell an up to 10-minute long story. If you are that one lucky picked out of the hat audience storyteller, just make sure you have your story well thought out with a strong opening and ending. We're providing the theme of gifts and the stage. The story that interprets the theme of gifts in some way is what you bring. My name is Leah Delaney, and I would like to thank you for tuning into Xfabula here on WMSE 91.7 FM. Xfabula was produced and edited by Xfabula co-founders Leah Delaney and Amy Schleicher, along with Jeremy Kuzniar, Tom Crawford, and Ryan Schleicher of WMSE. For more information on Xfabula storytelling and details of upcoming events, head over to xfabula.com. This has been a collaborative project between Xfabula and 91.7 WMSE Frontier Radio.